Mike DeRotocop here for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and it's been what seems like forever, but I'm back with my co-hosts Randy Haynes and Colin Weatherwax, and we're going to do something a little different for this week's episode. Thanks to Smata, we have a list of all the fab that was spent in TGFBI this past week, so we're going to break down some guys that went for over $50, and we'll tell you if we think they're worth it or not. After that, we'll put together some sort of a surprise team for the first 3 months of the season. But let's start with Brian Slack in League 5, who spent $71 on Jose Alvarado. Colin, I know you're a notoriously big spender when it comes to fab. You could just see the amount of money you spent on Scott Kingery. So tell me what you think about the move, $71, Jose Alvarado.
Yeah, let's not bring Scott Kingery into this, okay? You know, that was one of my mistakes so far this season. So for Jose Alvarado, I mean, once they traded Colomé to your Mariners, Mike, you know, he kind of opened up as the, you know, presumptive closer. But now that Archer's on the DL and, you know, they don't have any starting pitchers, I could see him starting the game sometime. You never know with this Tampa Bay Rays rotation. But anytime that there's a speculative closer on the waiver wire in, you know, in an industry league or in any home league as well, you have to pay up to get them just in case they turn into something. And if he can turn into, you know, last year's Colomé or the year before's Colomé, where he had, you know, 40 plus saves, or if he can provide that over the rest of the season, if he can get you 25 to 30 saves, then he'll definitely be worth it. But I think for now, I think it was a little bit too much for my liking.
So, Randy, I just wanted to ask you, because in League 5, Bradley Newman spent $170 on Kyle Bearclaw. Now, his situation is a little more clear than Alvarado's is, considering everything that's going on in Tampa with the opener and all that stuff. But Tampa is probably a better team than Miami, and the save chances might not be there for Bearclaw. What do you think about him going at $107?
I don't have a problem really with either buy. If I had to pick one, I would take Bearclaw, because I do think his situation's a little more set in stone for now. I mean, obviously he'll be lucky to get 15 or so saves at the max, you know, the rest of the way with how the Marlins are going. But the thing with Alvarado and the Rays is, even though Alvarado has really good skills, high strikeout guy, you know, they haven't really, you know, they weren't giving Colomé a whole heck of a lot of saves before he got traded. And since they've, you know, since Colomé was dealt away, they haven't really had like a set, you know, plan with how they're going things. Like Colin touched on, they have so many guys that are in flux. They're opening games, they're pitching long relief, you know, they just lost Archer again, you know, again today. So yeah, I think skills wise, Alvarado is probably the better pitcher, but I mean, this might sound weird. I think Bearclaw might end up with more saves the rest of the way, even though the Marlins might win half as many games as what the Rays win, because I don't really want anything to do with this Rays bullpen. I think it's pretty unsettled. We saw Johnny Venters get a save. You know, Chaz Rowe is still there. Jamie Schultz is somebody that came up and looked pretty decent in relief. You know, he could get himself in the mix, and Sergio Romo could find himself closing on days that he's not opening. So I don't really want anything to do with this race situation if I can help it.
And it's never a good situation when Sergio Romo's starting back-to-back games and then 2 days later getting a save opportunity. So I pretty much want nothing to do with that. I agree with you there that Bearclaw will end up getting more saves than Alvarado in the long run. In League 7, Greg Smith, I believe it's Greg Smith, yeah, paid $62 for Jaime Barea, and he got sent down to the minor leagues. I don't know if Greg knew that when he was making that move, but maybe it's a long-term thing. Maybe he likes what he sees from Barea. Another one was Camargo, who John Russell in League 5 went $50 for. And I know you like him, Randy. You have anything to touch on with Camargo?
I like Camargo. He's a nice little player. Yeah, it looks like he's going to play well enough to at least keep Austin Riley down for now. He has multi-positional eligibility, and that's a, you know, once they get Acuña back, especially, that's still a really good Braves lineup, where even if you're hitting lower in the order, you know, there still should be a, you know, plenty of run producing opportunities and run scored opportunities for Camargo.
And Chris Meany spent $50 on Francisco Cervelli over in League 11, and we're going to get to the old surprise team for the first 3 months or so in a little bit. But Colin, are there any catchers out there that have been more surprising to you than Cervelli this year? I mean, this guy's been great. People are drafting him as a catcher too, and he's turned out to be one of the better catcher ones.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was out there, especially in a 15-team league like this one. You know, coming into the year, I was actually targeting him as my catcher too, like you said, Mike, just because last year he kind of had an up-and-down season, but it was more injury-related than performance-related. So for him to come out this year and kind of provide the ex-Yankee-type stats where he's hitting for a good average, has a little bit of pop, and surprisingly, the Pirates have been kind of good. He should definitely be owned in 12 to 15 team leagues, and he's probably better than most of the catchers that you're running out there every day.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If you go over back to League 5 now, Ryan Morrison spent $150 on Nathan Eovaldi. He also went for $55 in League 9 to Troy Clowder. And I know before we got on the air, Colin, you made a remark about Eovaldi not pitching too well tonight. Talk to me about these bids at the time, considering they were done on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, a speculative add on Eovaldi, anybody that can get you, six innings, hopefully, and he showed pretty well his first start. I think that was more, the opponent that he was facing, because this, today on Tuesday, he's pitching the Nationals and he's not doing too hot. But, he was a highly touted prospect. One of the things was he was out of the zone too much. So, and, coming back from Tommy John surgery like he did, it's not going to help. His control issues for a couple of years, and then he had a little bit of an injury scare this offseason as well. So, as a speculative ad, I'm on it. I'm for it. But he's probably someone that I wouldn't spend that much money on, especially not, 15% of my fab, because there's a good chance that, even after the start today, I'm dropping him come next fab run.
Yeah, today, I mean, it's easier to talk about after the fact, but he did face the Nationals. He went 5 innings, 4 runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. He let up the home run to Matt Adams. Randy, $150 was spent by Ryan Morrison in League 5 for Eovaldi. Do you think that's way too much? What do you think there? Considering, all things considered, this was Sunday night.
Yeah, I think it's too much, considering Eovaldi's obvious health issues in the past. And it was nice to see him go out and throw 6 innings, but that was only on 70 couple pitches. He's I still think the Rays are going to be monitoring him extremely closely. And even when Eovaldi was making 30 starts a year for the Marlins and then for the Yankees for a little bit, he was never a huge strikeout guy, even though he throws hard, has a decent splitter, but he's around an 8.5% swinging strike rate guy for his career. And I don't see, after all the injuries he's had, him being able to add on to that, that part of his game this late in his career with all the injuries that he has had. And Tampa, like we just touched on, we're talking about Alvarado a little bit, they're not gonna, their bullpen is like 14 or 15 people deep at this point, it seems like, and they're going to use those guys. So I don't see 6 innings being something that happens regularly for Eovaldi. And I do think some of the better lineups that he faces, especially in his division, and like he's facing the Nationals, but some of the better lineups in the league are going to be able to get to him, because he's just never been able to put the velocity on his fastball and the movement on some of his pitches and turn it into swings and misses. So I don't see where Eovaldi is worth that price tag and has much relevance, if at all, the rest of the way in mixed leagues.
And Randy, I know you do the article every week for Friends of Fantasy Benefits as far as starting pitcher streamers go, and there's one guy, because I always read the article, it's a great article, there's one guy that always seems to pop up, is Chad Kuhl. Now, would you be more inclined to spend, just hypothetically, all situations aside, all things considered, $50 on Chad Kuhl or $50 on Nathan Eovaldi?
I'll try Kuhl, because I trust, I trust Kuhl to make, make his start every fifth day for the rest of the way. And, anybody that reads my article early in the year, when Eovaldi was supposed to make his first start of the season back in the end of March, beginning of April, I made the joke that Eovaldi is just a fancy word for bullpen day, because that's what, that was the big thing that the Rays were doing. And Eovaldi's never been somebody that's gone deep into games. So I would much rather have Kuhl, just for the stability. If you're digging down that low and you need to throw $50 at somebody, I would do it for Kuhl.
Yeah, I would love to see the ownership across TGFBI of Chad Kuhl. I don't have that in front of me. Colin, I know you've had a lot of issues with the way the Rockies have handled things this year, considering you spent a pretty high draft pick on Ryan McMahon in your main event league, if I'm not mistaken. This week, he goes for $73 in League 6 to Kenyatta Storen and $106 in League 4 to James Anderson. And I've been chasing Kenyatta Storen all season long. I don't know how his team's pretty good, but he's really hasn't wavered at all. He's been at top of the overall standings pretty much all year. Do you think $73 for Carlos Gonzalez is a good move right now?
I mean, I guess. We've seen it before if they're just chasing, the streakiness of Carlos Gonzalez. But, I mean, right now you're probably catching the tail end of the streak. And if it's anything like last year, he's going to show it for maybe 1 to 2 games and then just fall right back off the cliff. So, with the Rockies, it's so hard to pinpoint the guy that I want if it's not named Nolan Arenado or Charlie Blackman, because they're just rotating guys in and out. You know, like you said, Ryan McMahon, they have a guy in the minors is Raumil Tapia, and he got some playing time last year. So as soon as, you know, Cargo gets hurt, which is inevitable, you know, Tapia can come up. And of course, it was David Dahl at the beginning of the year, but now he's hurt. So I'm trying to stay away from Colorado because they burn me so bad. And I'll probably try and take some other guys from different teams the rest of the year.
I agree with you. I want nothing to do with Carlos Gonzalez at this point. Over in League 11, you got Corey Schultz here, who spent $61 on Ronald Guzman. And I'm going to go back to you, Colin, here, because you're a Texas Rangers fan. You think he's worth $61 at this point? I know he's heating up a little bit lately. What do you think about him?
So Ronald Guzman was someone that I didn't know really anything about whenever he was called up, but he's actually turned it on and he's actually playing really good defense. And that's something that I guess Joey Gallo didn't want to play that infield. He said in a couple articles the other day that he prefers the outfield. So that being said, I mean, they don't really have anybody else. They had Mike Napoli last year who was holding down that position. So I think there's no competition for him at that position, and if you need that corner infield spot filled or that utility spot filled, he's going to provide some power. He's got 6 or 7 home runs so far this year. I know the Texas Rangers offense hasn't looked too good so far, but I think it'll only get better moving forward throughout the year. And you know, $61 seems like a lot now, but you know, based on the other guys that were picked up this week, he might have some sneaky value towards the end of the year.
And he's definitely been heating up a little bit lately. And first baseman really isn't as deep as most people think. I just put up a tweet the other day to everybody in my league trying to acquire a first baseman because Trey Mancini hasn't been anything what I thought he was going to be. Sorry about that one, Randy. And people are getting back to me saying they needed a first baseman. So first base is very scarce, at least in League 6. So not many people or somebody's hoarding them. I don't know what the deal is there. Scott Green in League 13 spent $78 on Jeremy Jeffries. And if this was a holds league, I'd be all for it. Jeremy Jeffries actually is one of the surprise guys that we might talk about later. His ERA is like a .68, if I'm not mistaken. And it would have been nice to see him fill in instead of Jacob Barnes or Matt Albers earlier in the year while Corey Knebel was out. What do you think about $78 for Jeffries here, Randy?
I'm not a huge fan of the price tag on the surface. Now, I don't know if this guy has Knebel on his team already. So maybe if you are a Knebel owner and you're light on saves anyway, maybe you want to go over the top to make sure you secure Jeffress, who does look like if something were to happen to Knebel again, he would get the first crack at saves considering how dominant he's been in a setup role so far this season. You know, Jeffress has, you know, some value in 15 team mixers if he's going to keep, you know, performing like he is. You know, but there's not, you know, obviously the save situation, you know, the save opportunities aren't going to be there in that situation with Knebel being back. So maybe he is a Knebel owner and is just trying to secure that handcuff, so to speak, for him and getting Jeffress. But, you know, Jeffress has 15 team mixed league value, but not quite that high, at least for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be buying anything for Jeremy Jeffries, especially because even if Knebel gets hurt, we've already seen that he's not going to get the save chances, and they're going to lean on Josh Hader more and more throughout the year, especially whenever it gets to playoff crunch time, trying to secure that division or trying to secure a wild card. So I don't think Jeffress has any value in any league besides like a 20-team league, because they've shown that they're going to go to Barnes, they're going to go to Matt Albers, and then also Josh Hader, he's going to get – if he's throwing gas, if he's striking out everybody, they're not going to take him out of the game. And that's one of the reasons why I've gotten rid of Knebel anywhere I can, because he's not going to end up with as many saves as he did last year.
Well, the thing with Jeffress is, and Colin and Mike especially, you guys were big preseason on getting, you know, the elite setup guys, like, you know, like the Andrew Miller types, and it looks so far, at least through 2 months, that Jeffress has been that. So the ratios are at least going to help you there. Jeffress isn't a, you know, there are a lot of one inning relief appearances on his game log, but there's some 4 and 5 out, you know. Games on his log so far this season, so he could help you in a 15 team mix. Is he worth that much money? Probably not. But if you're somebody that wants to, you know, that doesn't mind throwing in Davinsky, you know, as your one of your last pitcher slots, you know, in a weekly league, if you've got some bad matchups from your starters, there's definite value there if he's going to continue to perform like this.
Yeah, and just like in the beginning of the year when everyone went nuts over Adam Ottavino when he was striking every batter he faced out, Jeffries has been kind of doing the same thing. And I hate to say it, Colin, but it's kind of hypocritical for me and you to say that Jeffries isn't a good ad here when me and you have preached the Andrew Miller, Chris Davinsky, Brad Peacock the whole season. You know what I mean?
I'm calling you guys out on your stuff.
Andrew Miller has been burning me to the ground all year. But, you know, I believe in a few podcasts I said Andrew Miller or Josh Hader. I should have just flipped the order and gotten rid of Andrew Miller and we would have been okay.
And the Hader is definitely the go-to guy out of all the multi-inning relievers before the season. I was even talking about Yusmeiro Petit at one point. So Hader was definitely the winner of that bunch. Eloy Jimenez went to Jeff Zimmerman for $54 in League 4. And I love this upside. Eloy Jimenez gets called up tomorrow. People are spending hundreds of dollars on this kid. Jeff Zimmerman got him for $54. Who knows what's going to happen here? If he has the room to stash him, it has to be a great ad, right? Right, Randy?
Oh yeah, I mean, we've already seen what's happened, you know, so far with some of the guys that have been caught up, you know, like Soto and Acuna, the impact they've been able to make right away. Austin Meadows, so you know, and him as somebody that just has huge power upside, you know, like 70 grade raw power, and he's performing, you know, so far this year in Double A, he has 10 bombs, you know, so far in Double A. And I think it really, you know, his performance last year kind of fluctuated a little bit, but I think that might have had a little bit to do with going across multiple levels and multiple organizations with being traded and all. So I think Jimenez is somebody that if you have room on your bench, you know, he needs to be stashed. Unfortunately, the White Sox, you know, have no reason to promote him, you know, like a Pittsburgh or an Atlanta that we've seen this year that are performing well and could sneak into the wild card and can justify calling him up and starting that, you know, and starting that arbitration clock. But it's going to get to the point, like we're going to see here probably with Vlad Jr. hopefully in the next month, it gets to the point where they're not improving their skills, they're not honing their craft and destroying Double A pitching. So White Sox can throw him, you know, bring him up, you know, maybe it'll energize the fan base a little bit. And I think I expect him, Jimenez to produce right away and contribute big time power for fantasy owners.
Yeah, out of this whole list so far, I think that's one of the ads I like the most. And I know Jimenez dealt with a little bit of an injury earlier in the season, but he seems to be healthy now. And he's really hitting well, so that's definitely somebody to keep an eye on. The next guy is Brad Johnson in League 12, spent $55 on Joe Jimenez from Detroit, who has pretty much taken over the eighth inning role, and he's right behind Shane Green, who might get traded at the deadline. So that's not a bad move to pick him up for $55. What do you think about that one, Colin?
I don't want the eighth inning guy in Detroit, honestly.
Do you want the ninth inning guy in Detroit?
Shane Green kind of has the role right now, and like you said, he could get traded, but I'm not sure, you know, if they'll get enough for Shane Green to let him go, because I'm sure they're trying to compete in the next couple of years, and, you know, in order to compete, you have to have that ninth inning closer, and I think that he could be that guy for them moving forward. So to pick up Joe Jimenez, I mean, yeah, this league is so deep, it's 15 teams, and everyone needs saves, it feels like, so just picking up the next speculative guy is the thing that we'll see in every fab, it feels like.
Yeah, you got to kind of be ahead of the curve with these things, and some of it's luck, some of it's knowledge, but you never know what's going to happen. And getting that guy, maybe Brad Johnson's in a serious need for saves, or maybe he just needs saves later in the season, whatever it is. So he gets Jimenez for $55. And Mike Leake goes for $74 in League 7, and $50 in League 8. What do you think about Mike Leake, Randy?
I don't know the context, you know, for those couple of teams, but if you're spending that any kind of fab on Mike Leake, you're in trouble. I don't see where Mike Leake, you know, even as an innings eater type, you know, has much value in 15 team mix. It's I can't get on board with that one. I you know, not to be mean, but I can't get on board with that one.
What about you, Randy? Colin, excuse me.
I mean, yeah, he's an innings eater, but he plays for the Mariners, and why would you want someone that plays for the Mariners?
So he went to Greg Smith in League 8. I'm not sure, excuse me, in League 7. I'm not sure who he went to in League 8. B. Carey from Fantrax, actually. So I'm, as the Mariner fan, I'm not huge on Mike Leake. I never was. Sometimes he'll go out there and spin 7 innings of 1-run ball. Don't ask me how he does it, but he does it. But I'm not a huge Mike Leake fan. Another guy I'm not a huge fan of is Lance Lynn, who went to Joe Gallina in League 13 for $57. Randy, you're putting up $50. Who would you rather have, Mike Leake or Lance Lynn?
Actually, Lance Lynn. You know, Lance Lynn hasn't been great this year by any means, but he is kind of slowly sort of starting to turn things around a little bit. You know, there's always been more strikeout upside there with him instead of leak, you know, to begin with. So, if you look at, if Lynn's starting to maybe turn things around, maybe that's a decent buy, and he's who I would take a chance on, 7 days a week over Mike Leake.
What about you, Colin? Leake or Lynn? $50.
Shane Bieber. For me, I'd rather take a flyer on some of the younger guys that have come up so far this year, or even that haven't made it to the big leagues yet, and, spend like half that on them. And just hope that, throughout the season, either an injury happens, but just know that an injury is going to happen. And maybe their performance down at the minor league level will get them back up. And a guy like Shane Bieber, a guy, another pitcher like Michael Kopech or Forrest Whitley or someone like that, that's going to come up and provide me with a couple months, maybe even more of dominant production than middling production. I think I'm going to take the flyer on them.
Let me circle back for a second, Randy. Add Chad Kuhl into the mix with Lance Lynn and Mike Leake here. You think Kuhl's better than those two guys?
He's definitely better than Leake. I've had a chance to bring up Lynn over the last month while Colin was talking, and there was a couple rough spots there against St. Louis and at Anaheim. But there's also been some good starts in there too. He took care of business against Detroit and Kansas City, which is kind of what you want to see. And it wasn't pretty against Cleveland, a few days ago with 5 walks, but he was at least able to limit the damage and get one earned run. Or I'm sorry, hold them to one earned run. So, maybe Lynn is starting to come around. The upside for me is higher than it is for Kuhl by a little bit. So I'd probably just take the chance on Lynn at this point if I had to choose between those three.
All right, something to keep in mind. Now let's move over to League 8. Andrea Lamont spent $51 on Frankie Montes, and Heath Capps in League 10 spent $62 on Montes. What do you think about that one, Colin?
I mean, it's a good spot start, and there's a chance that he can kind of find his niche in that rotation. He's only pitching once this week, so, it's kind of questionable. But if you're picking him up to, hope that he solidifies his spot in that rotation, then, $50-$60, kind of like the guys that I was just talking about, the younger guys that have potential, I'd rather throw it at them than the older guys that are just deteriorating.
Logan Morrison goes for $50 in League 13. Any thoughts on that, Randy, or Logan Morrison is what he is at this point?
Yeah, he kind of is what he is at this point, but you touched on it, a little bit ago about that first base has been kind of, I don't know whether it's low-key anymore at this point, because I feel like more people are starting to bring it up. First base has been pretty bad this year, so there's certain situations where I could see where you either want to take a shot on Logan Morrison just to mix things up or see if you can get it, find a better option, or Logan Morrison might just be a flat-out upgrade over who you have now with kind of the state of first base. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, that was Dave Reether, one of our guys at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Now, this one's interesting, and this was a lot of money, the most money thrown at anybody this week as far as FAB goes. $211 by Andy Germani for Max Muncy, eligible at first base and third base in League 4, and also $143 of FAB in League 2 by Michael Waterloo. We'll start with you, Randy. Talk to me about Muncy. I mean, he's good, but is he $211 good?
Well, I was able to grab him 2 weeks ago, more out of just desperation and needing somebody that was getting some consistent playing time for $12, and I've been very happy with Muncy so far. I mean, he looks like somebody that's maybe made some legitimate changes. He's hitting the ball a lot harder than he ever had in his his stints with the Athletics in the past. And he's also hitting the ball in the air more. He's somebody that had 50% ground ball, over 50% ground ball rate at his time with the Athletics. And so far this year with the Dodgers, he's hitting the ball in the air 46% of the time and hitting it hard nearly 50% of the time. So the question long term there is going to be playing time. But if he continues to hit like this, I don't see how the Dodgers can't at least make him a strong side, a strong side of a platoon guy that's playing first, giving Bellinger a day off. He can play in the outfield. He can play some third base if maybe they want to move Turner around a little bit. But if he continues to hit, the Dodgers have shown that if you're hitting, they'll find you a way to get you in the lineup. So I think $200 is a little aggressive on Muncy considering those playing time concerns. But at this point in the season, you might not get anybody. You know, it's hard to find a guy that's performing like Muncy is, even on a limited basis or a part-time playing basis. So I do like where Muncy's headed overall.
Yeah, he's definitely got the power. The average is 243 right now. He slowed down a little bit. The BABIP, though, is 254, so expect that to rise a little bit. He is striking out 25.4% of the time, which I'd like to see that number be a little better. Colin, $211 on Max Muncy, is that something you would ever do?
It's a little bit much for me, but I mean, he's a left-handed first baseman for the Dodgers. He's just not the one that we thought that was going to be producing. Throughout the offseason, it was always Cody Bellinger, but I was touting that, you know, he was going to fall back, and you know, he could find himself being dropped down to the minors. He's already getting more days off now than he was last year. And, you know, Max Muncy is taking advantage of it. And, you know, even though Bellinger can play all over the field, he's played center field, he's played first base, he's played corner outfielders. But, you know, he's just not hitting. He can't figure it out at the plate. And like you said, Randy, if the Dodgers are in a flux and there's someone that's doing better than Bellinger, they're going to ride the hot hand. So, you know, maybe 211 is a little high, but you know, if those playing time concerns kind of iron themselves out, you could have a steal there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out with Muncy in LA. Another guy that's interesting to see how it plays out is Yairo Munoz, who went to Ryan Morrison in League 5 for $75. And off the air, Colin, I believe it was you that was saying that you like Munoz. $75, you like him that much?
Maybe not $75, but maybe about 50. 50 is probably a good number. He's got a lot of power. He's got a lot of versatility as well. He's playing right now for DeJong, but you know, he could find himself, you know, once DeJong comes back, he could find himself playing third base or, you know, kind of moving all over that infield. He's a fast guy. He's got a lot of power. He's a young guy, so he's just kind of developing now. And you know, I trust the Cardinals whenever they say, you know, this young guy is ready to go in the big leagues, because they've shown it, you know, year in and year out. They always have someone that comes up and we're like, who the heck is this guy? You know, last year was Paul DeJong, and he came up with 30 home runs. And, you know, maybe Yairo Munoz can get that, but there is some playing time concerns. But, you know, $50 is probably my niche for him. Anything over that is a little bit too much.
Yeah, I like Munoz. I saw him play in spring training, and he was actually on fire. And I figured he would get a shot sooner or later. I don't know if I like him $75, but I do like him. He's not a bad player. Daniel Palka went for $62 to Al Melchior in League 13. And Al's one of my guys, but I don't think I'm spending $62 on him. What about you, Randy?
Yeah, that might be a little high, but Palka's somebody that's been putting up, you know, some pretty decent numbers quietly over the last month, and he's getting fairly regular playing time on top of it. So, you know, again, everybody's, you know, situation, you don't know, you know, it could be different. And with in a league like TGFBI, when you have those two utility spots plus five outfielders, you know, everyday playing time gets to be pretty valuable at some point. Now, Paul, I don't know long term if Puck is going to stick. He doesn't really walk that much at all, but he seems to be hitting the ball pretty hard and hitting it in the air as of now. So we'll see if the walk rate or lack of walk rate ends up catching up to him. But, you know, ride the hot hand if you're desperate enough.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to touch on real quick, was that his walk rate was 4.5%. Strikeout rate was 24.3%. I mean, he is a big boy. He's 6'2", 220 pounds. Big guy hitting from the left side. His BABIP's at around 330, so his average should go down a little bit. Palka's not bad, don't get me wrong. I just don't know if he's $62 worth. There's a couple other guys I'd rather spend my fab on. And one of the guys I'd rather spend my fab on if I needed a second baseman is Jose Perella. And Dave Reuther did that in League 13. Spent $55 on Perella. And I've always been a big Perella supporter. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you were a big Perella supporter too, Randy. I think he might have came up on one of the podcasts back when last month or the month before. What do you think about that, Randy? $55 for Jose Perella.
Yeah, I actually drafted Perella with one of my last picks, you know, back during the draft. He's stayed on my roster all year. He's found a way into my lineup all season. I knew he wasn't a big power guy, but I'm disappointed with zero home runs so far to go, and I think he's only got three or four steals. He's still staying at the top of that Padres order, so the runs and the RBIs are a little higher than what you think for somebody with that kind of profile. If he's going to, you know, he's been hitting cleanup for a little while, he's hit second, so, and they keep throwing him out there every day. It seems that the second base job is his, and there's nobody taking it from him at least as of now. So yeah, Perella's a nice guy if you need some flexibility. Good, you know, safe batting average. You know, not going to kill you in runs and RBIs. You know, even though he is on a pretty bad team, I would just like to see a little bit more power from him.
Yeah, I like Perella. Like I said, a couple more guys here. There's only four more guys left. One of them's Clayton Richard, who went to Brett Carey for $65 in League 8. I'm just going to group him in that Lance Lynn and Mike Leake grouping over there. One guy that we talked about off air was Mike Soroka, who went to Scott White in League 12 for $67. You want to just touch on him real quick, Randy?
Oh yeah, I mean we've talked about Soroka back when he made his debut. Love the skills. He's somebody that it looks like the Braves are in a situation with some off days where they don't need a fifth starter until the 16th or 17th of June, and that kind of lines up with Soroka's rehab. So he was dropped in this league, after he went on the disabled list. So if he was dropped in your league, if somebody had a rush of injuries, had a roster crunch and had to drop him, just go out there and check. He's probably not out there because I've checked some ownership percentages on him lately, and it looks like he's owned in the majority of leagues across the different sites. But you never know. Just somebody to keep in mind that should be back, it looks like, in the next 10 to 14 days.
Max Stassi went for $100 in League 8, also to Brett Carey. Colin Stassi, worth $100? I know he's been getting a lot of hype on Twitter lately, but I still don't know if he's worth $100.
Well, I mean, he is in the Houston Astros lineup, but I would definitely want Cervelli for half the price if I had the option. But, you know, Brian McCann's been on the disabled list for a long time. They don't have any reason to rush him now that Stassi's kind of, you know, been performing to Brian McCann's level. I think Stassi was definitely worth the ad, especially in a 15 team league. I don't know if I would have spent 10% on my fab on it. So, you know, he's a guy that I'm definitely keeping an eye on and hoping that he can keep the position long term. But $100 is a little steep for that kind of catcher.
Yeah, catcher is scarce, and like I said, he's got a lot of hype on Twitter, but he really hasn't been performing too well in the last couple of days, so we'll see what road he goes down. Last guy here for this week's fab was Kyle Tucker, who went for $50 in League 2 to Kevin Lauder. Anything on Tucker here, Colin?
So Kyle Tucker and Eloy Jimenez kind of remind me of people kind of trying to chase the Juan Soto hype train. They're just trying to, you know, pick up the next hyped prospect that, you know, just get him a week beforehand before he goes for a crazy amount of money. But with Kyle Tucker, I love Kyle Tucker. I think he could be a really good player. I actually have a player comp of Corey Seager with a little bit more power. So he could be a really good player for the Astros, but there's just nowhere for him to play right now. I mean, even after Derek Fisher went on the disabled list, even after Josh Reddick went on the disabled list, they still didn't call him up. And they had, you know, Tony Kemp, and they had Marwin Gonzalez go out to the outfield as well. So guys like that, I mean, it's worth the gamble. I think you probably could have got him for a lot cheaper because of the fact there's no news out there on him right now. But speculative ads of prospects right now, I think, is kind of chasing the Juan Soto, okay, let me get this guy who's probably not going to get called up, but just in case I'm the one that spent the least amount of money on him.
Yeah, and maybe as the last laugh here, getting Kyle Tucker at that price, because if he gets called up tomorrow, he's another guy that's going to be going for a couple $100. So we'll see what happens with Kyle Tucker. So that wraps up the fab for this week. I know it was a lot, and I know we talked about some guys that maybe weren't so newsworthy, but we hit it all. We hit all the fab guys. And now we want to give you sort of a list that we're going to put together between us three. We're each going to say a different guy at a different position for the all-surprise team for the first 3 months of the season here. So I'm going to start here with catcher, and I think you got something. You're up with catcher, Colin, right? Yeah, you got the catcher. Tell us who makes the team for you.
So for me, it's Evan Gattis. So coming into season, he was being touted as this, you know, can't-miss late-round catcher, and he came out of the gates so slow. He came out hitting, you know, 200 in March and April. He only had one home run, and everyone drafted him for the home run power and getting the everyday playing time in Houston. So I saw in a lot of my leagues he was dropped. So I went out, I picked him up because I was one of those guys that was touting him. I was like, look, this guy is going to have everyday playing time as the DH. There's no Carlos Beltran there anymore. So there's a clear path to playing time, and I know he has the power. And so in the month of May, He hit 281 with six home runs, you know, 16 RBIs, struck out a lot less than he did in March and April. And hopefully he just kind of turns the corner now. He's going to play in that Houston Astros lineup, which is just great for him. He's going to drive in a lot of guys as long as he can stay healthy. And not playing the field is going to keep him on the field as much as possible. So he's a guy that I'm glad that, you know, if you stuck with him, great, because now he's given you what you were hoping. And if you were able to pick him up, then you're hopefully going to reap the benefits for the rest of the year.
All right, so I'm going to give you a comp here for Evan Gattis, and you tell me who you'd rather have rest of the season. I'm going to name a couple guys. All right, Colin?
Okay.
Jonathan Lucroy.
Evan Gattis.
Austin Romine.
Evan Gattis.
Kurt Suzuki.
Evan Gattis.
Salvador Perez.
Sal Perez.
That's where it stops. What about Wilson Ramos, Yasmani Grandal? You take Gattis over either of those guys?
No, I think I'm going to stick with them. So basically, with that list that you just gave me, besides Lucroy, who's just trash, they all have like a backup catcher or are the backup catcher. And for Evan Gattis, there isn't really someone that's competing with his DH spot for now. Now, like we said earlier, Kyle Tucker can come up and take over for him. You just never know. But he kind of has that solidified playing time right now, whereas like Austin Romine is behind Gary Sanchez. And Yasmani Grandal has Austin Barnes as well. So there's just a couple questionable guys with playing time, and I'll take Evan Gattis over them.
So don't sleep on Austin Romine. He's in 373 with a OPS over 1,100 in his 59 at-bats. But I agree. I would take Gattis over him in the long term. Randy, you got a first baseman for us here?
I do, and it's Milwaukee's Jesus Aguilar, who coming into the season, I was – big on in anything that was the draft and hold or anything that's really deep, because there's a guy that last year in limited playing time just absolutely destroyed left-handed pitching. And I wasn't the biggest Eric Thames believer coming into the season to begin with, but, you know, health aside, I wasn't buying into Thames from a skill perspective. But Aguilar, you know, he is pretty much, you know, booted Domingo Santana out of the lineup every day with what he's been doing. You know, he had, you know, didn't even have full playing time the first few weeks of the season, and he is already the number 7 first baseman on the ESPN player rater. Somebody that is hitting the ball extremely hard. He's making good contact when he is swinging. He seems to be walking just enough. You know, his zone contact percentage is at 88%, which you like to see. And I think it's to the point now where the Brewers have no choice but to keep him in the lineup with the way that he's been going. WRC plus of 151, just any metric you look at with Aguilar is just through the roof, and it's been going on long enough now where you have to, you know, we have to start buying into it. The one knock on him coming into the season was he struck out 30% of the time last year. Well, he's cut that by nearly 7%. So you just, like, again, just keep going down the line, and Aguilar in every single category is improving. And, you know, again, he's cemented himself as their everyday first baseman. And if you're in a situation where you just picked up Aguilar as a fill-in for somebody and you already have an established first baseman, he's somebody that I would be – I don't know how much you're getting for Aguilar in a trade, but if you drafted, let's say, Anthony Rizzo, maybe you could trade Anthony Rizzo for a stud pitcher if you needed, or if your outfield's weak, flip Rizzo for a stud outfielder. And I think you'd be comfortable with Aguilar as your first baseman the rest of the way.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm a big Aguilar guy. I actually posed a question in our – I don't remember if it was on Twitter or in our group chat, Aguilar, Rhys Hoskins, and this was before the Hoskins injury, for the rest of the season. And another question I'm going to ask you, Randy, Aguilar or Mitch Moreland rest of the season?
Oh, Aguilar.
Aguilar, what about you, Colin?
Yeah, it's Aguilar. The one thing that, you know, I agree with Randy is, you know, Eric Thames, whenever he comes back, I think Jesus Aguilar is still going to get some playing time. And we think that Aguilar is probably better than Thames in the long term. But I think the Brewers are going to split it up just enough to make both of them irrelevant, which is a little scary. So, you know, unless Thames gets injured again, they're going to put Thames there. They're going to put Aguilar there. They're going to put Braun there. You know, and they have Domingo Santana coming off the bench as well. So it is a scary sight. Definitely don't believe in Mitch Moreland. I've seen it before in Texas. I'll see it again in Boston. It's nothing to go pick up and spend a lot of fab on.
The one thing with the Aguilar playing time, I know down the road it can maybe end up getting a little dicey, but that entire outfield, Braun, you know, we've seen it with Yelich already this season, we've seen it in the past with Lorenzo Cain. None of those guys have a long track record of being able to stay healthy. And again, Braun and Yelich have already had disabled lists in so far this season, so that's why I'm not too worried about Aguilar losing playing time, you know, in the long term. Maybe he has a couple less games here and there, gets subbed out a little bit more, gets a few more off days, but I do think with the injury history with the rest of that team that he'll find himself every day at bats one way or the other.
So I found the tweet on May 27th. I wrote, I started playing Jesus Aguilar over Rhys Hoskins in my daily league this week. I love this man. And it's been nothing but great since, because Hoskins ended up getting hurt and Aguilar's still hitting. So I agree with you there. Aguilar would definitely make my surprise team, considering he only does have around 150 at-bats. Second base, I think, is a no-brainer. Scooter Gennett is in 342 with 12 homers and 41 RBIs. Colin, I just want to know a little word association. The first word that comes to your mind when somebody says Scooter Gennett.
What the hell? Like, just what the hell? Like, how is this possible?
That's three words, but it definitely fits the Scooter Gennett narrative at this point. I mean, the guy has 75 hits already. He's eligible at second base, third base, and left field in Yahoo. He's only 90% owned. I don't know why he's not 100% owned, but he has 31 runs, 14 doubles. He even has a stolen base in there. His OPS is at 949. This guy's just having an all-star season, and I really do think he might end up starting the all-star game. We'll see what happens with that. Now, third base is this one's on you, Randy. What do you got for third base?
It's actually Eduardo Escobar, who is somebody that's been around for a while. You know, maybe not the – obviously, he's not the sexiest name out there at age 29. But he's been quietly very good, and somebody that's third and short eligible provides you some nice flexibility. You know, he's popped 21 home runs last year in a, you know, slightly part-time role, and I think he's to the point now that when Jorge Polanco comes back off suspension, Polanco might have to get either relegated to the bench, or maybe they end up making, you know, Sano and Morrison like a full-time first base DH combo, and Escobar just kind of stays at third base, because it's to the point where I don't see how Minnesota puts him on the bench. I mean, as we're recording during their doubleheader on Tuesday, he's already at three extra base hits and four RBIs, and they're only halfway through game number two of that doubleheader. So he's somebody that, you know, he might even be out there in your league still, because again, it's not a sexy name. He got a little bit of a cold snap a few weeks ago, but he's starting to heat back up again. And yeah, I like guys that have multi-position eligibility, especially when it's something where you can go between a middle and a corner like that. So, you know, Escobar is the surprise third baseman for me and my backup vote for shortstop.
He's definitely having a better doubleheader than Aaron Judge did, that's for sure. Colin, shortstop. I know you have a guy who is kind of putting up similar numbers to Escobar, maybe even a little better. Who do you got at shortstop?
I have Asdrubal Cabrera. I mean, it's just crazy. It's kind of one of those what the hell things again. He's just done it for so long, and this year, you know, he's just come back and done basically what we thought he would do, you know, 5-6 years ago, and he just keeps performing. And that's just the weird thing, because when on a team with Jose Reyes and Asdrubal Cabrera, if you would have told me, you know, 3 years ago Asdrubal Cabrera would be better than Jose Reyes right now, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But he just keeps providing. He's hitting 292 with 10 home runs and 34 RBIs. And, you know, I think he has a couple of position eligibility as well, probably just more in the middle infield. But he's been performing for that Mets team and, you know, at shortstop, which, you know, used to be in the past a very, you know, very volatile position. You know, he's pretty good for your middle infielder or for your second base or even shortstop.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of good things going on for the Mets right now, and he's definitely one of the bright spots. Moving to outfield here, I'm going to start with Michael Brantley. And if anybody tells you that they knew Michael Brantley was going to be good this year, they're straight up lying to you. 2016, he played in 11 games. 2017, he played in 90 games. This year, it's only been 48 games, and he does have a severe injury history. So I'm not really telling you to go out there and get him now, especially at the price he's at. But in 48 games, he does have 10 homers, 38 RBIs. The guy's hitting 323. He even has two stolen bases. This is not the Michael Brantley that I was expecting. I don't know about you guys. Randy, was this the Michael Brantley you were expecting?
No, not at all. if you would have told me set the over under at 81 games for him to play this season, I would have confidently taken the under, and he still could get there, mind you. But I also thought that even if in those 81 games that the performance wouldn't have been there, because he hasn't really put up numbers even the little bit that he has played over the last two seasons. And as somebody that had a lot of love for Bradley Zimmer coming into the season, this, you know, Brantley doing this has, you know, all but obviously killed him because he was sent to the minors today. I thought, you know, even if Zimmer struggled, worst case, that he wouldn't lose playing time because of his defense and the fact that Michael Brantley can't stay on the field. So I have zero shares of Brantley because I wasn't buying into it at all. And it's very, very disappointing for me.
Yeah, I think I have one share of him in a draft and hold, but he's a guy that I was completely avoiding because I've been burned in 2016 and 2017. I was just completely burned. I had no shares in 2015 whenever he almost had an MVP year. And so I've been chasing ever since. And, you know, come this year, I was like, okay, I'm going to stop chasing. I can't do it anymore. He's never going to be the guy that we thought he was going to be. And now he's coming out and proving me wrong. So it shows you how much I know. But I know a lot of people, you know, were hoping for this from Michael Brantley. It's a great sign because of all the injuries he's had to endure the past couple years. But yeah, it's a complete surprise.
It really is. Another guy that's a surprise, and I don't want to spoil it, Randy, but I just want to throw a stat out there, so I'm going to say his name. You picked Brandon Nimmo here for the outfield, and as great as he's been, this guy is 6-for-37 against left-handed pitching, hitting 162, and he's still having a good season. If he can figure out how to hit left-handed pitching, he's going to be phenomenal. What are your thoughts on Nimmo here, Randy?
I mean, Nimmo's been crushing it. You know, you got to love the walk rate up at 15%. You know, the issues against lefties is a concern. It's a small sample size, so I do think there's a chance for him to wiggle out of it. But when they get healthy, they're going to be in a situation where they're not going to need to play him against left-handed pitching regularly. So that almost might be to the benefit of Nimmo, because you weren't, you know, obviously Nimmo was undrafted in probably every league, so you weren't investing in him getting every day at bats. So at this point, if he is a strong side platoon guy, it might end up being better for his average as things go along. Again, he's just crushing the ball, drawing a lot of walks. He's running and running successfully. He's got six steals already. You know, he might be at least to this point, he definitely has been the best Mets outfielder with Cespedes injuries, and Conforto still doesn't look quite right. But he might just flat out be their best outfielder, you know, in general, even when those guys are healthy. Yeah, so Nimmo is somebody that I, you know, don't worry about the playing time down the road, because I do think that it could actually benefit his overall, you know, per game, you know, numbers.
Yeah, he's been great. Colin, I'm going to give the floor to you here for the last outfielder. You could have a little hometown glory here.
Nomar Mazara. He finally did it. He finally did it. So he's done it for the first part of this year so far. So I'm going to put that in quotation marks there, just so far. So the biggest thing with Nomar Mazara is he has all this potential. When will he reach it? And this year so far, he has 14 home runs, which is a great sign, because I believe the past couple of years he hasn't exceeded over 15 home runs. And then also, can he hit left-handers? Well, right now he's hitting 265 against lefties, and he has a 279 average against righties. And he has 8 home runs on righties and 6 home runs off lefties. So the splits are really good. I will put an asterisk by him. If you can sell him now, please do. I don't think that he can perform this high or this good, have as many home runs, you know, the rest of the season. You know, I don't think he can even double that amount. But I am loving what I've seen so far from Nomar Mazara, and very glad to have gotten him in a few leagues as well.
As great as your hometown glory was there with Mazara, I want to move over to pitchers so I could talk about my friend, my very good friend, Daniel Mengden, who has been nothing short of phenomenal this season, maybe an all-star. And his numbers are as great as they are, and he did have a 2 1/3 inning, 4-earned run start against Houston. Every other start, he hasn't let up more than 2 earned runs, except for 2 starts. His first start of the season against the Dodgers, and his actual last start against Tampa Bay, which he cruised through 8 innings, came out for the 9th for his second consecutive complete game shutout, got hit around a little bit. Mengden in 74 innings has a 2.9 ERA. His whip's under a 1. His opponent batting average is a 2.26. He's really been great. The strikeouts haven't been there, which scares me, I'm not going to lie. 48 strikeouts in 74 innings, but he's definitely been a surprise. He's definitely been a lot better than people thought he was going to be. Another guy, Randy, you said Tyson Ross?
Yeah, I had Tyson Ross as mine.
And Tyson Ross is another guy who kind of fell off like Michael Brantley did, where nobody trusted him anymore, and now he's putting together some good numbers. Talk to me a little bit about Ross.
Yeah, so all the guys that I've picked for my surprise team, I at least have benefited from in one league or maybe multiple leagues. I can tell you that I have Tyson Ross in zero leagues, and this is very disappointing because I wasn't buying into it. You know, thoracic outlet syndrome is no joke. We've seen what it's done to Matt Harvey's career and a few other guys' career. And, you know, Colin, you saw it firsthand last year with him attempting to pitch for the Rangers. It wasn't pretty. And you know, I had no reason to believe that this was gonna change. A few starts in, I looked into it. I was like, it's a nice start, but I don't see how it's gonna last. And I, you know, if this ends up jinxing Tyson Ross, I apologize. But everything he is doing is legit. You know, back to striking guys out, getting tons of swing and misses. That slider that's always been his bread and butter pitch it's back. I mean, he's getting a lot of positive results with that slider. His changeup is maybe the best it's ever been, kind of playing off of that slider and playing off of his fastball. So, you know, doing a great job of mixing up his pitches. And I'm here to take – I said it in my – anybody that reads my pitching planner article, you know, Streams and Nightmares that I do for Friends of Fantasy Benefits every Monday, knows that this week I took my L on Tyson Ross, and I'm here again to take my L on Tyson Ross. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and Nick Pollock over at Pitcher List, I think it was after Ross's first or second start, wrote a really good breakdown of Tyson Ross and his individual pitches and how good he is. So that's something to check out if you want to know a little bit more about Tyson Ross. Colin, one more starting pitcher, and I know you're happy about this guy because you compared him to Chris Archer, and you were actually right on this one. Who is this?
This is Nick Pivetta, and I remember that podcast. Both of you threw expletives at me whenever I said Nick Pivetta over Chris Archer. You said I was crazy and that I should be fired. I think there was a couple more things that I can't say on air, but this guy is definitely better than Chris Archer, first of all. Second of all, he's been getting better and better each start. I mean, he's throwing his curveball more and more now, which seems to be close to his best pitch behind his fastball. And, you know, he's got four wins already on a decent Phillies team, but his ERA right now is a 3.48. His FIP is a 2.88, and his xFIP is a 3.37. So what that's telling me is that, you know, he's been good, but he could have been better. And none of this is fluky. All of this is sustainable. He has a 10 K per nine as well, so he's striking out enough guys to stay relevant. And he's a guy that I was looking to add, you know, a long time ago. Hopefully he can sustain this throughout the year because, I have a lot riding on this guy.
Yeah, he's really been great, and you were definitely right on that one. I think me and Randy will concede victory to you there.
There's a first time for everything.
Chris Archer won on the DL today. So let's move over to relief pitchers real quick. We'll touch on it as we wrap up. One guy I put on the surprise list was Sir Anthony Dominguez, and this guy's came from relatively nowhere and has just been absolutely filthy. 13 2/3, no walks, 15 strikeouts. He's given up two hits this season. His whip is a 0.15. His opponent batting average is a 0.048. I actually traded him in my home league, which is a holds league, before he got his first save, and now I'm kicking myself for it because now he has two multi-inning saves. So he's been great. You got a reliever for me, Randy?
Yeah, mine is Brandon Morrow, who's been a 0.89 ERA. Obviously, that's great. And the reason why I chose him as mine is because I wanted nothing to do with him this season. I didn't think he'd be very good. We saw the usage in the playoffs last year, obviously, for somebody that doesn't have a lot of – that's never had, you know, great durability to begin with. But he's been great. You know, if you took Brandon Morrow, you're very happy with everything. And it all looks legit. Again, it's just a question with health for him, but so far, so good.
What about you, Colin? You got a reliever for us?
Yeah, my guy is Blake Treinen, and if you follow Pitching Ninja, you've seen his fastball where he throws a four-seamer that's straight as an arrow and then a two-seamer that in the same spot, but it curves all the way inside on right-handers, and it's just filthy. So he has a 0.95 ERA so far this year, which is a little lucky, not too lucky, but he also is striking out a lot of people. He has 11 K per nine. He's got 13 saves so far on a pretty bad Athletics team. So he's kind of living up to his name as Blake the Witch Treinen, and he's thrown in a good season so far, and I'm pretty happy with where I have him.
And I know a lot of guys are kicking themselves over that because they probably told themselves they would never draft Blake Treinen again after the fiasco last year in Washington. But then he picked it up at the end of the season, and now he's really showing what he could do. So that wraps it up. Hopefully we get some good feedback as far as the Fab goes. Hopefully nobody unfriends us, unfollows us on Twitter for saying something bad about one of their Fab buys. But you guys could follow me at Mike the Rotocop on Twitter, Randy at RTH222, and Colin at CWeatherWax13. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks.